The Art Spot with Art Minius on 97.9 FM WCHL.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, and I saw above me that endless skyway, I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of diamond deserts. All around me a voice was a-sounding, this land was made for you and me. There was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. A sign was painted, said private property, but on the backside it didn't say nothing, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust cloud rolling. A voice was chanting as the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Welcome to the Art Spot on WCHL FM 97.9. This week, we're talking about Woody Guthrie, and you just heard perhaps his most familiar song, This Land Is Your Land, in the alternate or original version, which comes from the new Smithsonian Folkways collection, Woody at 100, a centennial box set put together by Jeff Place at Smithsonian Folkways, brother-in-law of our own Jerry Williams, coordinator of the Carborough Music Festival, which is coming up in about 3 weeks. But the occasion of this Art Spot is a celebration of the life of Woody Guthrie, taking place next Saturday, September 15th, from 2 until 4 o'clock at the Art Center in downtown Carborough. This year, 2012, marks the 100th anniversary of Woody Guthrie's birth in Okemah, Oklahoma, and October will be 45 years since Woody passed away at 55 in a hospital in Brooklyn, New York. We have with us our guest today, Dr. Robert Cantwell from the UNC American Studies Program and author of a seminal trio of books on the folk revival in America, including When We Are Good, which he has open in front of him. Bob, why do we remember Woody Guthrie 100 years after his birth?
Well, you know, there's so many representations of Woody, so many recorded songs and pictures and now images that he himself drew, album covers, liner notes. We scarcely need to remember him at all because we're always being reminded of him. And so he's become, you know, such a immediate presence in our lives, that is, if we follow this kind of music, it's hard to forget him, frankly. And I think one thing we might want to talk about is, you know, what would Woody Guthrie be were it for us, were it not for all of the celebratory lionizing sort of imagery and all the recorded music.
Yeah, he has, by this time, and since he was hospitalized for the last 15 years of his life, for essentially 60 years, Woody has been more icon than actual flesh and blood man. And though I think in recent years he's reestablished himself in a way that he's not Arlo's dad anymore or any one of his talented performing grandchildren's grandfather, but resumed a position as Woody Guthrie.
Absolutely right. The icon and image is one thing, certainly, but let me tell a story which I think is interesting and illustrative. Not necessarily the main story of Woody's life, but an interesting one. As he was falling ill to Huntington's chorea, which is, of course, the one of the more ghastly themes in his life, he would appear on Washington Square in New York at the end of the 1950s with other folk singers, among whom was Jack Elliott, who became his famous protege, soon to be followed by Bob Dylan. But what I wanted to say was that during those years, Woody was not feeling well. He was beginning to experience some nervous deterioration, and so he appeared unkempt and unshaven, and people thought he may have been drunk or that he was some sort of bearded bohemian. Well, really nothing of the sort, but the image of Woody Guthrie at that time was so powerful that his imitators would really take on the mask or they take on the manner and the bearing of a man who was really falling gravely ill. And and there's this funny sense, you know, in which the folk revival, at least right at the outset, got a somewhat distorted picture of Woody Guthrie because he was not a well man and distributed his image about during those years on Washington Square.
And that suggests the amount of impact Woody had, that people would be so drawn to him that they would attempt to imitate the effects of Huntington's chorea, which it looks like now he was probably 6, 7, 8 years into by that point.
Absolutely.
Probably 5 or 6 years before he was diagnosed.
Yeah.
And yet people wanted to be like Woody, wanted to sound like Woody.
Absolutely.
And that is a big part of the story that we will come back to on the next segment of the Art Spot. But this Woody Guthrie Centennial Celebration at the Art Center is 2 to 4 p.m. next Saturday, September 15th, at the Art Center in Carrboro. And we'll be right back on the Art Spot after this. We're back on the Art Spot here on WCHL, FM 97.9 and chapelboro.com, and we're talking about Woody Guthrie, whose life will be celebrated on the occasion of 100 years since his birth at the Art Center next Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4. Our guest is Bob Cantwell from the UNC faculty and author of a number of books about the folk revival in America, over which Woody stood as a powerful symbol and icon, even though he was hospitalized by the time the revival of the late 1950s and 1960s took place. He was much more a figure of what some folks consider the second folk revival, the one of the late 1930s and early 1940s that was very closely tied to the radical politics of the time. And people like Leadbelly, or Woody, or Aunt Molly Jackson, rural folk who had become radicalized, eventually were drawn to New York City. And what did they find there, Bob?
That's a great question. A moment ago we were talking about Woody as icon. So one question would be, where does all that iconography come from? Well, let me tell another story. The actor, radical actor, agitprop actor Will Geer was out in California, out in L.A. In the late 30s. And Woody at that time had already been radicalized in the San Joaquin Valley. I think it's interesting that, like Charles Seeger, father of Pete and Mike and Peggy, who saw the conditions of the migrant workers in the Central Valley during those years, were so shocked by it that they were radicalized in a way that was quite different. It had a very different complexion from the radicalism of the East Coast, which had a long history in socialism and Marxism. I think it was that form of radicalism, that form of anger that Woody adopted. It was never, in my judgment, ideological in Woody's case. He just saw what seemed to him to be a profound injustice and wanted to see it remedied somehow. In any case, Will Geer was an actor who had already adopted a kind of a Western persona. He had an act in which he played a sort of a singing grandpa. He had been in a play in which he had that role, a proletariat drama called Let Freedom Ring. And he had a kind of an act which involved Western sketches, folk songs, topical songs, a Will Rogers sort of humor and persona that Geer projected. And when he met Woody Guthrie at a party in Hollywood, he recognized in Woody a version of a kind of real world version of himself. Woody had been a stage performer. He'd been a country western singer, and it's Geer that brought Woody Guthrie to New York.
And subsequent generations knew Will Geer as Grandpa Walton on the Walton Show.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So that gives you some sense of the connection. Now, here's Woody's first appearance in New York was at a benefit sponsored by John Steinbeck for the agricultural workers of California. He came on stage having been characterized by the Daily Worker, the communist newspaper, as a real Dust Bowl refugee. Well, he was not a real Dust Bowl refugee. He was a country western performer who'd already adopted the Woody Guthrie persona that we now know so well for his radio programs and his newspaper columns in People's World. So when he came on stage for the benefit with the stage set of Tobacco Road behind him, the audiences, which included Alan Lomax, the folklorist, thought they had stumbled on the real thing, or that the real thing had stumbled on them.
Yeah.
He had so successfully adopted this idea of a kind of clover kicking Western folk singer, that he was able to play the role completely convincingly.
Yeah, that role playing was directly connected to the impact he had, because he fulfilled people's expectations, and that gave him a platform to present the more than 1,000 songs he composed, as well as 3 novels and a remarkable, if not always accurate autobiography or memoir, Bound for Glory.
You're so right. You know, what you're saying suggests that we should go back just for 1 second and think about who Woody Guthrie sort of really was, if he wasn't the unlettered Dust Bowl refugee. Who was he? Well,
And we will get to that right after this. We'll be back on the Art Spot here on WCHL right after these announcements.
A mighty hard road that my poor hand is hold. My poor feet has traveled a hot, dusty road. Out of your dust bowl and westward we rolled, and your desert was hot and your mountains was cold. Thank you. in your orchards of peaches and prunes, slept on the ground in the light of your moon. On the edge of your city you'll see us, and then we come with the dust and we go with the wind. California and Arizona, I make all your crops, and it's north up to Oregon to gather your hops. Dig the beets from your ground, cut the grapes from your vine, to set on your table your light sparkling wine. Green pastures of plenty from dry desert ground, from that Grand Coulee Dam where the water runs down. Ever stayed in this union, us migrants have been. We'll work in this fight, and we'll fight till we win. Well, it's always we ramble, that river and I. All along your green valley, I'll work till I die. My land I'll defend with my life if it be, 'cause my pastures of plenty must always be free.
We are back on the Art Spot here on WCHL FM 97.9 with Dr. Robert Cantwell, talking about Woody Guthrie and how he liked to appear to be the rustic, unlettered character, which he certainly wasn't. You can hear on the Woody at 100 collection a 1940 radio show where he suggests that he only knew The Grapes of Wrath by seeing the movie, when, of course, he had devoured the novel.
You know, as Woody says in his song "Ramblin' Round," my mother thought I'd be a man of some renown, and that's accurate. Woody grew up right at the lower edge of the middle class. His father was an energetic though failed businessman. There were huge tragedies in his life involving fire and disease, which I won't go into. And so he was, in a sense, orphaned. But he always wanted to be a writer, and he had a Joycean genius with words. His letters, just his letters by themselves, are relics of a literary imagination, I think really unparalleled, frankly, during that period in America. And I understand that I read there's a new novel from Woody Guthrie on the way. We'll be seeing it next year, that I understand is, quite a monumental piece of work. So Woody was a writer.
Yes, he was, and he borrowed melodies largely to put his words to, which is part of the reason he was able to be so prolific as a songwriter with more than 1,000 titles. You can see all sorts of traditional tunes, but very original lyrics that often, and this again suggests his power, sounded as if they were traditional songs, but were actually new compositions, right. New lyrics put to traditional melodies.
Right.
Wanted to tell folks a bit about this show at the Art Center. You can get more info at artcenterlive.org or by calling 919-929-2787. The Woody Guthrie Centennial Celebration at the Art Center on East Main Street in Carrboro, 2 to 4 on Saturday, September 15th, with artists including John Shane and Joe Newberry, Kathleen Whalen, Kim Arrington, Danny Gotham, and Jim Watson, The Blood Jar Creepers, Sacrificial Poets, Tim Stanbaugh, Ellie Kennard, Cyril Lance, Nathan Golub, myself, and my guest Bob Cantwell will all be there next Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. celebrating the 100th anniversary of the birth of Woody Guthrie. We heard a couple of his songs on this show, This Land Is Your Land and Pastures of Plenty, but there's so many more. So Long, Been Good to Know You, Do Re Mi, Deportee, which isn't the actual name of that song, Plane Crash at Las Guedas, and lots more flowed from the pen of Woody Guthrie. We could go on all day, but we are nearly out of time. Thanks so much for being with us, Bob.
Thanks for having me. It's great seeing you. Great talking with you.
great having you here. Maybe a final 30 seconds about this icon and man, Woody Guthrie.
Well, I was thinking about the stories we told right at the outset. Imagine if Walt Whitman were to walk into your presence, or people who had the experience, you know, of encountering very, very persuasive, compelling impersonators. I once encountered the Lincoln impersonator at the Ford Theater and thought I had come across the real Lincoln. I'm sure that's what people felt when they came across Woody Guthrie on Washington Square, and why people like Jack Elliott and finally Bob Dylan were able to pick up his legacy and carry it forward.
Yeah, you can see how Ramblin' Jack would have been drawn to someone who was a cowboy and a musician,
absolutely,
both.
Absolutely, the perfect formula.
This has been the Art Spot. Please stay tuned for a countdown to kickoff with Ron Stutz on WCHL FM 97.9.